This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
How much does home field advantage matter in college football? You can read it in the guide coming out Thursday, and Adam Burke coming up in just a little bit here on Sharp Money to discuss. Remember, go to VSiN.com/subscribe, the college football betting guide. Listen, I know you've heard it on every other show because we're tackling college football relating to the guide, applicable information to help you become more sophisticated when it comes to a sport that's probably the three of us. I would say it's our favorite sport to bet. Maybe a mall with college basketball, but college football's right there. This guide, it's so cheesy how I do it, but I have so much respect for how much work goes on behind the scenes. I'm just a dummy that talks on the air. They grind behind the scenes, so I can get syrupy about it. But this is, again, been here for, 5 years now. This college football betting guide is a must. It's VSiN.com/subscribe. You will not regret it. Specifically because there's just so much turnover now. I was reading through the guide, the preview, fellas. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. I was reading through the preview, and I'm like, that dude transferred? And this is what we do for a living. Like, it's impossible to keep up.
You're absolutely right. It's become free agency every year in college football, and not only for the players, but the coaches as well. You know, I mentioned it earlier, 60 or 61 offensive coordinators have been replaced at schools. Now, you have certain people like Brian Hartline who got promoted within, but still, it's a new OC instead of Ryan Day. So you look at it and you have to adjust to some of these things, and you're absolutely right. There's so much work that goes into it. It's not easy. And the other thing is, guys, the information gets out there towards August and September. To gather some of the information in May and June, it's not the easiest time of the year to get it.
Yeah. Listen, just nuts and bolts, smart, sophisticated betting content. If that's what you're looking for to kind of ride shotgun with you through the college football season, Thursday, it's coming. Don't be late. Big guy, I want you to do me a favor. We've got the trade deadline. When is it, fellas? In an hour? 58 minutes?
58 minutes.
Less than an hour baseball? To go.
Okay, I want you, do me a favor. You have the Max Scherzer quote ready because I couldn't quite conceptualize what he was trying to say during when you passed it over to me. I just want to pass this piece of information along. Now, I didn't like Eduardo Rodriguez when he was signed by the Tigers because he's Eduardo Rodriguez, but I will tell you that he has been a pleasant surprise. The lefty, here's the deal. I mentioned earlier in the show that he has a minimal trade clause, meaning each year he can tell the Tigers, these are the 10 teams I have to approve. Well, guess what happened? Passan is reporting, Jeff Passan, the Los Angeles Dodgers and Detroit Tigers had a trade in place for the left-handed starter, Eduardo Rodriguez, but Rodriguez invoked his 10-team no-trade clause that included the Dodgers, and the deal is now dead. Sources are telling ESPN and Amal, you had the right reaction. What does that mean about Rodriguez?
Yeah, absolutely. This is surprising. You got a chance to go play for a contender. I can appreciate that being in Los Angeles can be more challenging, but Eduardo Rodriguez signed a five-year, $75 to $78 million deal with the Tigers after 21, and for him not to make this move is a bit surprising because I think he would have been your potential starter in the first game of the postseason.
I can't disagree with you. He eats innings as well. Yeah. I think the stage was too big. I'm shocked by the fact that that's one team as far as the 10 that he won't go to, big guy. That's a shock.
It's just a loser move, and it's a loser move for the future. Like, look, if I told you you could join one roster right now, I think between the three of us, two of us would choose the Dodgers. Like, one, live in Los Angeles. Two, you know every year you're going to be in the postseason. Three, they have a scouting department that has unlimited resources that's going to find a way to get the best version of you on the mound every time. This screams volumes about where he's at mentally. Like, this is a guy who doesn't want the pressure of situations in the postseason pitching for a team with expectations. And there's a lot of guys in sports like this. You can be really good pitching in fourth place for the Tigers, but can you be great when it matters
Soft.
And there's a pennant push?
Totally agree. Soft, you've got more trades happening as we get closer and closer, inch closer to the trade deadline. Can I give you the four teams that I came up with that paint the picture of the 2023
guess?
Baseball season? Yeah, I'd love for you to guess. Okay, here's how I'll set it up. There are two negative.
Oh, okay.
And there are two positive. These four teams, to me, a list of four, that so far, as we sit here August 1 and head down the stretch, these four teams kind of paint the picture of the 2023 baseball season. Amal Shaw, go ahead.
Baltimore Orioles.
First place, a statistical anomaly. The run differential's 50, and the plus, The Tampa Bay Rays, who are in second place, 139 plus run differential. Think about that. They hit with runners in scoring position. They're opportunistic. Comeback wins, one run wins for the Orioles. Great defense. They just a deep farm system. They've got Rutschman batting leadoff. By the way, everybody was talking about the Orioles landing Verlander. Well, they're going to make a trade at the end of August. John Means is coming back.
You're absolutely right about that. This team is playing extremely well. That series in Tampa, we'll look back on it. I think they took 3 out of 4 in Tampa. Could be the crucial series in terms of who ends up winning the AL East. Second team I'm going to go with, the Chicago White Sox.
Thought about them.
Okay.
That would be a negative. Dustin, pick a team.
The New York Mets.
Yep.
Okay, the Mets, that's obviously a negative. They're 50 and 55, by far the highest payroll in baseball this year. It just never clicked. Think about the contrast from last year, Buck's first year, where there wasn't a reason for them to start the way they did, and they just built on it. You can have the momentum in sports conversation. It was legit with the Mets, fell apart late. Braves took over. It's a great team. But 50 and 55 with Verlander, Hall of Famer, Scherzer, Hall of Famer coming in. Obviously, World Baseball Classic losing the closer didn't help them any, but 50 and 55, absolutely, they're part of the bigger picture story. 2023. Amal, you're next.
I was going to go with Padres, but I'm going to amend that to the New York Yankees.
Nailed it. Last place in division. Did you know that they've struck out 30 times in the last two games? Also, Boone has legitimately gone loco. Like, every time you turn around, Aaron Boone is losing his freaking mind.
Well, how about yesterday?
Which has kind of shown itself on the field. No?
What about yet? Did you see what happened with him yesterday?
No.
Herman is scratched because of some sort of injury. They said he could have started through it, whatever, but they scratch him. They start Brito. And then in the fourth inning, Herman's warming up. He comes in the game and pitches like 4 innings.
You guys are doing well. So Amal nailed it with the Orioles. That's a positive. The Yankees, that's a negative. Dustin, the Mets, a negative. There's one more team, as far as I'm concerned, that is painting the picture of the 2023 season. Amal, you can take a stab.
Well, I thought Atlanta would be too obvious, but I'm going to go with the I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Reds.
Cincinnati Reds are exactly the team that I picked. Now, they're 59 and 49 in first place. Ellie De La Cruz has taken somebody like my nephew Landon, who doesn't care about baseball. He cares about Ellie De La Cruz. He's that type of player, transcendent as far as just the swag that he plays with. The Reds were expected to be improved, certainly weren't expected to beat the Cardinals in division, certainly weren't expected to beat the Brewers in division. This is a great story this year as the Reds sit in first. You see the slide with the Brewers as we talk about it, but the Reds and Orioles, by far and away, the two big positives. You could have taken the White Sox and replaced the Yankees, but I think just because of market and just because the expectations and the fact that they're in last place in their own division, I think the Yankees and Mets fill out the four that paint the picture. You guys cool with those?
Well, you mentioned all the strikeouts for the Yankees. Just want to add, they've struck out today. They're the only team that has not made a deal here at the deadline.
Struck out is an interesting way to phrase it.
Struck out is definitely the way to say it.
It's so funny he brought that up. It's so funny that Patrick said that, because that went through my head. I'm like, should I correct him on that one or should I let it slide?
Struck in is a word.
I think you just struck it out with your point, but you're well
struck
put.
From the record. Strike
if you guys were to replace, I guess, the White Sox for you, Amal, Dustin, is there somebody you would replace of my four?
As a negative or positive?
Or a positive. It doesn't matter.
Here's what I'll say. While you were gone, I had a realization. Remember how boisterous I was? Is that a word? Boisterous?
Boisterous works, but boisterous does too.
I combined two of them as one word.
Yeah, you're good.
Lit.
Before the season, the Milwaukee Brewers were my favorite bet for the World Series at 40-1. Completely ignored the ticket until about a week ago. It is very much alive, and that team is hideous looking. But somehow, they keep winning games, and they're not going to end up relinquishing a playoff spot. I think they're going to end up going to the postseason. They're going to get Woodruff back. They're going to make a push here. I like the addition to Canha. Their younger players are going to get more experience and be better than they were earlier in the year. I think the Milwaukee Brewers are very sneakily alive. Also, they added Andrew Chafin to the bullpen today. I like a lot of these subtle moves they're making.
By the way, nice. I like this Brewers team. I think they got a great shot. I still think their pitching could potentially stymie Atlanta in the postseason. They definitely have an opportunity. So the word is stricken.
No, he was trying to say they didn't execute something. Stricken would be like, take that off the record.
No, that's what I'm saying. When he said struck out.
He said they could be stricken. I love the guy. Now he's bitter at me. I can tell he's got
well,
the
I'm
face.
Googling. I'm not good at words. I don't do words.
No, you do words well. It's just you saw what happened. After we called him out for it, he started to struggle with boisterous.
Well, no, I didn't know if it was boisterous or boisterous.
he ended up on. Amal, would you take the four and replace any?
The Mets definitely on there. Orioles, go ahead.
Two teams that the Rangers and the Blue Jays would jump out to me.
That's fair.
I wouldn't go with the Blue Jays, but I would agree with you on the Rangers. And then the other one I would go with, who is the, Patrick, you had the Yankees. I would probably replace the Yankees with the White Sox, only because the Yankees are still theoretically in contention. The White Sox have been an absolute five-alarm fire.
Well, and the Angels technically held the keys to the entire story of the season by not trading Shohei, because that would have made someone else's season even better.
Totally agree. Yeah, you guys were right, though. The Braves are just, it's too obvious. Right. I couldn't do anything with the Dodgers. Maybe you could put the Rays in there, but they've cooled out. Like, the Orioles overtaking the Rays.
Yeah.
And the Rays kind of strucking out. That is where I put them behind the Orioles. Strucking. Look at him. He's bitter. Hey, we've got more trades coming in as we are just 49 minutes away from the trade deadline coming and going in Major League Baseball 2023. We'll come back with those. And Adam Burke. College football as well. Sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, so you're tormented by the transfer portal, that coaching carousel. Got you confused? We'll let our 2023 VSIN College Football Guide get you ready for the upcoming season. This year's College Football Preview Guide. The magazine includes season win totals, picks, and previews for all 133 FBS teams, plus feature articles on how to create power rankings, calculate home field advantage, and who to bet on for the Heisman. Get Matt Youmans' preseason top 25, Steve Mackinnon's top betting systems, and what you need to be ready for kickoff. The College Football Betting Guide comes out Thursday, and as one of many benefits to becoming a VSIN Pro subscriber. So sign up now, VSIN.com/subscribe. So Youmans, of course, Mackinnon, of course, and always, whenever we do something like this, Adam Burke at the front as well. I'm Patrick Maher. Amal Shaw, Dustin Sweetelson. This is Sharp Money. I texted him a couple times during the break. Missed the big guy here. Always look forward to hanging out with Berkey on Tuesdays here on Sharp Money. We know that we appreciate you coming in. First off, let me just start there, and we'll get to the trade deadline. The Verlander move, hi Adam, the Verlander move that happened right before the show started, headed back to Houston. Not necessarily a surprise, but what'd you take from that?
Well, you know, look, I mean, I think it makes sense. Houston, obviously very familiar with Justin Verlander. Verlander, actually, his numbers are pretty good this season, despite the fact that he's had a really, really big strikeout percentage decrease. Not exactly sure what the reason for that is, but Houston, I'm sure, will be able to figure it out, because that's something that they've been really, really good at over the last several years, is getting guys to increase their strikeout rates, also adding some velocity for guys too. So we'll see if they're able to do that with Verlander here. But you know, look, with the way that Christian Javier has pitched, which is not particularly good, Hunter Brown, he's leaked oil at times as well. Same thing with JP France, a younger guy who's got a lot of regression signs. It made sense for them to go out and get Justin Verlander, who they expect to be a reliable horse the rest of the way. And again, like I said, a guy that they're very, very familiar with. And of course, they pick up Kendall Graveman to help out the bullpen in a previous deal as well. So I don't think Houston really needed to do a lot, but I think that they've checked the boxes that they needed to.
Justin Verlander historically has not been a great performer in the postseason. This acquisition for you, when you look at the American League, does it improve Houston drastically enough to make them a prohibitive favorite? Just maybe one of the teams in the middle of the pack here, because it is a competitive American League.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, look, you know, I think the most important thing is something that can't really be taken care of today, and that's, will Yordan Alvarez stay healthy? That's going to be the most important thing for this Houston team. This lineup is exceptionally right-handed heavy. Tucker and Alvarez, the only two lefties that regularly play in it. I kind of expected them to be a player for Cody Bellinger, but once the Cubs took him off the market, you know, there weren't really a whole lot of options for the Astros to go out there and get. So I think they're deserving of having the shortest price here to win the World Series in the American League, which is what you see at DraftKings and a lot of other places, trailing only the Braves and the Dodgers, understandably so. You look at Texas this week too. I mean, Texas making some moves as well, but of course losing Nate Eovaldi, so they had to account for that. Jonah Heim is a much bigger loss than I think people are really talking about for Texas. So there are a lot of moving parts here in this West Division, but I think that, you know, Houston, look, I mean, we could look at Houston, look at all the things that have gone wrong for them, all their injuries, all that. We can look at how great Texas's offense was throughout most of the first half, and Houston was just right there the whole time anyway. And I think that says a lot here about this Astros team.
Yeah, you get a horse in a long series to give you two starts. You know what you're getting from Verlander. Amal mentioned it. Wasn't a great postseason performer, but then did perform with Houston. You nailed it, Berkey. His worst strikeout rate since 2015 for Verlander. He is 40. The one thing about Verlander, and Amal said it well, it's not just about giving you innings. When he struggles, he'll battle through. You don't have to pull him. He's not mentally weak. He's been there. So, again, Houston Astros, they reunite with Justin Verlander. You may have seen it. Eduardo Rodriguez was on the move to the Dodgers. He's got a 10-team no-trade clause. He said no. The Tigers, of course, were looking to move on. That Dodger team has a great farm system. Obviously, they like the package coming back, but Rodriguez said no to the Dodgers, Burke.
Yeah, so, I mean, look, for Eduardo Rodriguez, last year was so difficult for him. He had, you know, the off-field personal issues that took him away from the team for a long time. Maybe he just didn't want to relocate. And look, I mean, there are a lot of reasons, no offense to your Tigers, to go from Detroit to L.A. I mean, you know, especially one of them being L.A. is very much in the playoff hunt, and Detroit does not have a playoff chance in hell. So, you know, for Rodriguez, I mean, look, you know, he had his reasons, and I give him credit for that. And again, great job by his agent getting him, you know, a pretty long-term deal along with this no-trade clause where, you know, if he wasn't comfortable, he wasn't going to go, and he's not comfortable with it. So he's going to stay. And, you know, the thing that I think will be kind of interesting to see going forward here is, you know, what the Tigers are able to do this offseason, because now they have Rodriguez still in the fold. If guys like Matt Manning and Casey Mize and Tarek Skubal and all these guys can stay healthy, this team is a few bats away from being a legitimate contender in a really poor division. So with Rodriguez staying, if I'm ownership, I go, you know what, maybe it's not exactly what we wanted, but let's go out and spend some money and get some bats and try to take advantage of this very weak division we're in.
I like the point you just made about Rodriguez having his reasons, turning it down. And I think so many times we just look at the on-the-field situation in between comparison between the Dodgers and the Tigers. It would be a no-brainer in terms of winning, but there could be a variety of factors that we don't see behind the scenes that play into this decision. So just something to pay attention to whenever you see a player that turns down an opportunity. One other thing I'd point out, and I heard Draymond Green say this recently, I think Nikola Jokic said the same thing. I think we as fans sometimes, or bettors, get so enamored with, hey, you got to go to the best situation. But for a lot of guys, this is just a job that pays extremely well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, you know, just to bring it back to something that's, you know, close to me with Cleveland, with the Aaron Civale trade to Tampa Bay, you know, Kyle Manzardo is having a little bit of a tough year in AAA. And there was a story written before the season that his mom is waiting for a heart transplant. And like, these are things where, you know, a guy's performance may slack off a little bit, and, you know, they're getting all the hate and the vitriol on social media and, you know, getting, you know, jeered by their home fans and all that kind of thing. We truly don't know what's happening with a lot of these guys. This was an extreme case that a beat writer actually wrote about, but, you know, guys could be going through divorces. Guys could be going through, we've seen several players, you know, Austin Meadows, Trevor May, a few other guys dealing with anxiety and actually spending time on the IL or the restricted list because of that. So yeah, there are always a lot of things and a lot of potential reasons why, you know, guys have stuff going on. And for Rodriguez, again, maybe he just found comfort being in Detroit and he wants to stay there. And hopefully people respect that decision going forward.
Well put by the both of you. I couldn't have said it better. Big guy, we'll get the winners from Berkey so far, as we are now just about 38 minutes away from the trade deadline coming and going in Major League Baseball. But there are three teams that you said are snoozing. You want to run them by, Adam, big guy?
Yeah, three teams that need starting pitching and should be potentially playoff bound: the Baltimore Orioles, the Cincinnati Reds, and the Arizona Diamondbacks.
Well, I think when it comes to Cincinnati, I mean, Hunter Green's expected to be activated on August 20th. So I guess they feel like they'll be able to hang out. Well, activated August 17th, return on August 20th. And then Nick Lodolo, the goal for him is to be back the last week of August. those two trade deadline acquisitions, given the fact that you don't have to give up anybody from your prospect pool, are the two most valuable moves, quote unquote, that the Reds can make. So if they want to hold on, try to make it through the next 20 days until Green comes back, I can understand that. I do wish they would have gotten somebody. And there are, you know, innings eaters out there that are cheaper than chasing down the Lucas Giolitos and the Dylan Ceases of the world. Would have been great to see them go out and get some of those guys. But outside of their performance against Milwaukee, I mean, they've been pretty good against virtually everybody else, especially here ever since they started calling guys up. So I think for them, they're just trying to wait and see and kind of hope that, you know, Green and Lodolo can come back fresh and productive. Baltimore, I completely agree with. Baltimore should have absolutely done something. They still have 37 minutes to do so. It's not just the fact that they could use the starting pitching. It's that they're going to have a lot of guys in high-stress innings now that haven't had this type of workload before. Guys that are really jumping up, like a Tyler Wells, like a Grayson Rodriguez, if they wind up keeping him around, and they should. You know, there's some guys on this team that, you know, I kind of look at them and I sort of wonder how they'll be able to handle August and September here.
So, Amal, the idea of, and it looks like I think we've got the fire alarm going off, but the idea, like, we always talk about building for the future. When you get a sweet spot like Baltimore this year, where all of a sudden it gels quicker than you thought, you got to take advantage. You got to pounce on it. Like, Toronto underperformed based on the expectations. The Yankees are a disaster, can't continue to swing and miss. The Rays, who have a plus 130, nine run differential, yet you're still sitting on top. You have to make a move if you're Baltimore.
Patrick, could not agree more with you. I think the Orioles right now are holding pocket aces before the flop, and they've got to go all in. Look, when was the last time the Orioles were a competitive team? You know, I think back to the 90s when they got robbed on that Derek Jeter, Jeffrey Mayer play. Yeah. And, you know, this team has not had the opportunity. You got to go for it here. You've got a good enough team. And one other thing that's really important to me, guys, Justin and I have talked about this at length. There is not a team, whether it's the American League, and I know the Braves have been great, but this is not a 116-win Seattle Mariners team in 2000 during the regular year or 2001. This is not a Dodgers team that won 110 right. games last year. The opportunity is there, and you've got – I agree with you, Patrick. I don't care what your farm system is, because the one thing we realize in baseball, it is a long season. Doesn't mean you're going to be able to duplicate it.
Go get Dylan Cease.
That's what I want to do. When we come back, we have to talk about Dylan Cease. Like, so, for example – do the Dodgers now turn their attention to Cease after they were rebuffed by Rodriguez? We'll ask Berkey. Also, who's made a move over the last week or so that Adam Burke believes for a better is a difference maker? We'll come back and discuss just what 35 minutes trade deadline wraps up Major League Baseball at Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Berkey brought up prideful baseball teams ruining the trade deadline. I want to get into two of them. But first, download the DraftKings app today. And new customers can bet $5 and get $150 in bonuses instantly. Use the promo code. You got to use VSIN, V-S-I-N, when you sign up. It's that simple. DraftKings.com/sportsbook for full terms and conditions. All kidding aside, you've got the fire alarm. Adam Burke, Amal Shaw, Dustin Swielsen going off at the South Point. Burke made a great point. It's like those gambling at the tables, the fire alarm's going off. They didn't even look. They just continued to throw cash. I had a fire alarm go off in my apartment last night at 3 a.m. But here's what's weird about fire alarms. I didn't think there was a fire. I was just concerned about how to turn it off. Like, what is that? Like, shouldn't I be concerned that maybe I would die and perish? Okay. You mentioned the Padres and Cubs. Okay. And I don't know if this is pride. We all deal with pride in some way, but the Padres, who are 8.5 back in division, 5 games in the wild card, and the Cubs, 5 in division, 3.5 in the wild card. That's a lot. That's Soto. That's a Hader. That's Snell. That's obviously Bellinger. They just added Candelario, which is a very good pickup for the Cubs, but Stroman as well. Those two teams deciding to hold kind of put a wrench in the trade deadline here, Berkey.
Yeah, not even hold, but actually buy. I mean, yeah. You know, both of these teams have kind of made some acquisitions to try and help their position here in terms of the wild card chase. And look, you know, here's the tough thing about it for them is that both of them got hot at a difficult time, especially, you know, with the trade deadline looming. But also, the Padres, their -8 in base runs record, a metric that we talked about way back when before the start of the season, by projected run differential using their individual outcomes on the offensive and pitching sides, they should be 60-47, and the Cubs should be 60-46. So the Padres should be 8 games better than they are. The Cubs should be 7 games better than they are. Pythagorean win-loss says the same thing. So because they both got hot, the two front offices can go, oh, man, you know what? Like, this should turn for us. We don't have to sell. This is going to turn around. We're playing better than what our record is. The Padres are 0-10 in extra inning games. They're 6-18 in one-run games. So that is a team where you can look at them and say, you know what? Now that we're playing better, we shouldn't sell. We should keep Blake Snell. We should keep Juan Soto. We should keep Josh Hader and make a run at this because Arizona's weak. San Francisco, I think, is a little bit weak too. So I understand San Diego. For Chicago, bit of a tougher spot, but honestly, Marcus Stroman's been so bad here over the last month that he's submarined all of his trade value anyway.
I never thought Marcus Stroman was a guy anybody's really looking to acquire being better than a number three starter to begin with. Thought he was a guy you'd sit there and say, maybe you might get good 5 innings out of him in one postseason series. But I thought, Adam, Cody Bellinger was a guy that you could get some real pieces for because he gives you the ability with popping his bat, a plus-plus defender in center field, and what he can do for you. And then, of course, he's got experience of being in the postseason for so long with the Dodgers.
Yeah, and that was the thing. You know, once they said, well, we're not going to move Bellinger, like, the hitter market cratered. I mean, yeah. At that point, the best hitter that was widely available was Jaime Candelario for the Nationals, and he's a switch-hitting third baseman. There weren't a lot of teams that needed third baseman. So, you know, when Bellinger comes off the market, there's just not a whole lot to work with on the position player side. So that drives up the cost of guys that aren't particularly good hitters. And then, you know, you take away a Snell, and with the way that Blake Snell's been pitching, you could have gotten the moon for him. But you take him out of the equation, and now the price goes up for the marginal starting pitchers, the guys that, you know, the teams like Baltimore and Arizona aren't willing to pay the price for. So the Cubs and the Padres were, you know, kind of responsible for a lot of the moving parts at the trade deadline, and they kind of actually watered it down quite a bit by deciding not to sell.
Adam Burke in studio. Let's transition. Big guy, if anything comes down, again, less than 30 minutes to go as far as the trade deadline, you can go ahead and interrupt us. It's all good. Berkey, let's talk about the College Football Betting Guide. First, I think the audience would care. Let's talk about the process of putting something as laborious as this together, because it is so, there's so much information and it's just such a different sport right now, college football. And then let's talk about the home field advantage refresh that you wrote about, which I love because so much has been made over the past few years, the pandemic and other reasons, mitigation of home field when it comes to NFL betting, but you're starting to see it with college football as well.
Yeah, so first, I guess I'll say, I mean, the College Football Betting Guide, it is a big piece of work. I mean, we do team previews for all 133 teams. We've got several different feature articles as well, tracking down best bets from everybody in terms of season win totals, futures, and props. There's definitely a lot that goes into it. It's 195 pages. So there's plenty of coverage for you here with the college football season beginning in just about 3 weeks' time to try and get through. But you have to do it, right? I mean, in the era of the transfer portal with the NIL collectives and all that, the coaching carousel, I mean, coaches are just going places left and right. There's a lot to catch up on that takes place over the course of a college football offseason. So that's why we do team previews for every team and give you an idea of, you know, who's back, who's not, what the team's coaching staffs look like, what their projections are for the season based on the schedule. It's definitely a, we'll call it a labor of love, I guess, but I mean, it is a phenomenal resource, I think. And, you know, we'll have it out here on Thursday, as you mentioned, but there's so much information in there that you can build off of, including some of the more advanced stuff. Like you said, you know, I got a short little how-to on creating a basic power ratings model. I've got that home field advantage refresh as well. There's something for everybody in that guide. And I think that's what's really nice about it.
Let me start with the power rating model. Sorry to interrupt you, Amal, but like, there oftentimes there, we discuss power ratings, we discuss the process, but I don't know if we've ever really gone in depth and provided listener and viewer of VSiN with here's a good idea, a primer, a step-by-step how you can create your own power ratings. And I think that's invaluable.
No, I appreciate that. So it's just a very simple set of power ratings, something I learned about a decade ago that I continue to try to run. And really it's just rating position groups. And I grade them basically on a scale of about 40 to 100. 100, no one's ever 100 in the preseason, but teams like Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, you know, LSU, Alabama, teams like that are going to be closer to 100. And the UMasses and the New Mexicos of the world and FIU and all those would be down there in the 40 range. And essentially what I'm doing is just grading on my scale what the position groups look like. So, for example, quarterback is basically from 5 to 15 points. So the best quarterbacks in the country will be closer to 15. The worst will be closer to 5. And I just go through and kind of grade them on a national level in terms of the rest of their conference. And then once I get that value, I can compare the difference between two teams. That gives me a line on a neutral field for two teams. And then I apply my home field calculations to that.
Patrick, I love the point you brought up about the power ratings, because I was thinking the same thing when you mentioned that, because I think that's an area where so many people may be unaware of how to create it or to go about doing that. So it's a great point. I'm going to just ask you a question for my curiosity. How long does it take when you're researching a team, just when you're going through one team, let alone an entire conference, kind of put together and compile? Because as I was reading this thing, I was so impressed with the amount of information. You know, sometimes people will spew statistical information, but you've got breakdowns by in terms of key players on each side of the ball for teams, and there's a lot of work that goes into it.
Yeah, there is a lot of work that goes into it. I mean, it probably took me 3 or 4 days to get all these together, not working on it consistently, but you know, with baseball season and all that, taking breaks here and there. But yeah, it probably took me 3 to 4 days to really get the numbers where I wanted them to. The thing that's nice, and look, I mean, from a betting standpoint, it doesn't necessarily help me, but also there are a lot of games of the year lines, season win totals are out already, stuff like that. So I can refer to those to make sure that my numbers aren't too far off or too far out of range. There are some teams that I want to take positions on where I don't mind being 2, 3, 4 points higher than the market. But ultimately, the goal here for me is just to have an idea of where I think a line should be. Because I think a lot of times people just go, well, I think that line's high, or I think that line's too cheap. Well, what is that based off of? Is that just based off of opinion, conjecture, recency bias? What is it? We don't know. So for me, I just want to have a valuation for each of the teams so that I can create my numbers and then see what the market comes out at. And hopefully the goal is that the lines in the market move closer to my power rating numbers. And that's how I know I have a pretty efficient set.
Well, I think you can tell we're pretty excited for Thursday College Football Betting Guide. You can go pre-order VSiN.com/subscribe. The summer kickoff special, remember, gives you everything. The guides, the NFL. I think it's important to note, we already dropped our NFL guide more than a month ago. So make sure when you sign up, you get everything we offer. VSiN.com/subscribe. You can do it all for $175. We had Ben Hartsock on earlier. Do you believe Penn State, and I'm just going to throw a curveball at you, do you believe we should be having, on paper, talent-wise, do you think that we should have Penn State in the conversation with Ohio State and Michigan?
I would say until they prove us otherwise, not necessarily. Because, again, I mean, you know, for Penn State, they've played really, really well against every team except for those two. And those are the two games by which you are graded if you are the Penn State Nittany Lions. So when I look at my power ratings here in terms of this upcoming season, I have Penn State at 3.5 point home favor, or home underdog, excuse me, against Michigan. And I have them getting 10.5 on the road at Ohio State. So they are a dog in both of those games. It's the only two games for this season where they are an underdog. If Drew Aller ends up being the guy, if he winds up being, you know, a top 20, top 25 college quarterback, then all of a sudden Penn State's projection looks a lot different because of how good their backfield is.
You know, Patrick, real quick, when I look at Penn State, I think they're really good at certain positions, right? Carter in the linebacker position, King in the back of the secondary. But the problem is they're good in like 65 to 70%, whereas Michigan and Ohio State are good across the board in almost every single area.
And I know Aller was a 5-star. I just don't know. We've seen a little bit of him. It's not when I saw Aller, it's not like he jumped off the screen and immediately I thought I was watching CJ Stroud. You know, I think there's a difference there at Penn State. Okay, when we return, we'll continue trade deadline and more on the guide.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher and Amal Shaw on VSiN, the sports betting network.
23 new head coaches across college football this year. 14 of them will be taking the lead role on programs for a full season for the first time. So make sure you check it out. That's an article by Steve Mackinnon. Mackinnon sometimes can go over my head. This is a tremendous read where, again, sometimes the formulas and the theories, I just take them and apply from Mackinnon. But this one, you really need to know college football, college basketball, the importance on the number as far as a new head coach is huge. Make sure you check that out on Thursday when the college football betting guide drops. We welcome you back here, Sharp Money. I'm Al Shaw. I'm Patrick Maher. Adam Burke in studio. The big guy, Dustin Sweetelson's got plenty. He's got a bunch of bets, but also from the big guy, what he learned the month of July and his top 10. Fellas, am I missing anything? I'm trying to keep up. We're just now 15 minutes away from 3 o'clock West, 6 o'clock East Coast with the trade deadline. Have either of you seen anything as far as the trades coming in hot and heavy right now?
No, doesn't really look like it. I mean, there will be some deals that kind of leak in after the 3 o'clock or the 6 o'clock deadline because, you know, it takes time to go through medicals and contract situations and get everything sent to Major League Baseball and all that. So maybe there might be, you know, a last minute, you know, some sort of big shocking deal. But again, I mean, the trade deadline got watered down by what happened with the Padres and the Cubs, yeah. And it had kind of a domino effect on some of the other deals as well. So, you know, look, I think that Major League Baseball will kind of have to consider possibly moving the trade deadline back a little bit, maybe to the middle of August, and let the playoff chase kind of sort itself out, especially because it seems like the pitch clock is working in terms of generating excitement. Attendance is way up, especially in some markets where attendance is usually pretty low. So maybe to add a little bit more drama, a little bit more excitement, that'll be something that they talk about with the owners' meetings and the GM meetings here this offseason.
A couple things to pay attention to. Can the Dodgers make a move potentially for Jack Flaherty or Dylan Cease? And also, you mentioned it. I talked about this, Patrick, a couple of weeks ago. Push the trade deadline back to September 1st. Make the sport more competitive throughout the summer. And it doesn't hurt teams. It actually benefits them because we've talked about the Padres being in a potential precarious spot. Maybe the Angels change their mind on Shohei Ohtani 4 weeks from now if they look like they're 15 games out of the wild card or something to that effect. So I think for the competitive balance of a sport that needs all the infusion of positive energy it can get, it would benefit the sport.
Yep, well put. Big guy said hot and heavy. Maybe hot and heavy was for the start of the show with Verlander headed to Houston, headed back to Houston. Are you seeing anything starting to trickle in here, Dustin?
Well, it's been a really active deadline. I think we have to give these teams a lot of credit. I mean, a few teams did not make moves, as Adam mentioned, like the Padres and the Cubs holding on to their pieces. But a couple of trades I want to run by Adam here.
One, by the way, there is one. Tommy Pham going to Arizona.
There it is. So, Tommy Pham, who's been the Mets' most consistent offensive weapon this year, has been a very good hitter for them, has had great at-bats, really good production. But for the Diamondbacks, they really need starting pitching, so I'm surprised by that.
Who do you guys have in the fight between Tommy Pham and Christian Walker?
Christian Walker's a big boy.
That's what
he's
saying.
He's deceptively large.
Yeah.
But so, I will say, I mean, for Arizona, they're 19th in weighted on base average against lefties, and that's exactly why you go get a guy like Tommy Pham, because Tommy Pham slaughters left-handed pitching. That's the reason why he's been able to have such a long career in the big leagues. And, you know, that's kind of what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of complementary types of deals, platoon guys getting moved around, left-handed specialists in the bullpen, stuff like that. It seems like teams are, instead of going for the big splash, they're just kind of refining their rosters here at the deadline.
So Austin Hedges goes to the Rangers. It looks like Texas might be without Jonah Heim rest of the year in the postseason, which is devastating. He was an All-Stars, driven in 70 runs, hitting .280. Ton of offensive production out of that position. You get a guy who's the complete opposite. Not really an offensive catcher in Hedges, but maybe the best at framing pitches in all of baseball, Adam. How much does you lose the offense from Heim? How much does what Hedges brings defensively in framing pitches and working with his staff make up for that?
Yeah, that's something I got to watch a lot during his tenure with the Indians/Guardians. So, you know, that is something that's really important. And when you talk about the run environment in the playoffs, and Texas should be a playoff team, I see no reason to believe that they won't be, even with, you know, some of their deficiencies that they do have and some of the injuries as well. That matters so much, going from 1-2 as opposed to 2-1. You know, because in the run environment in the playoffs, it's all about hitting home runs. So the more plate appearances you can have ahead in the count, the better your chances are of hitting those home runs. So a guy like Hedges being able to take a 1-1 count and making it 1-2 instead of 2-1, or stealing that 2-0 strike, something like that. Those are things that carry a lot of run value, especially come playoff time. So that's something where he could also be a defensive replacement late in games as well. Mitch Garver's a guy that sometimes has issues with pass balls, wild pitches, stuff like that. So that's something that could end up ultimately really helping Texas, even though he is a complete and utter black hole with the bat.
You're absolutely right about that.
Go ahead, Amal.
No, I love what he said. That's exactly why I was laughing.
All right, so let me do this. Dustin, we're going to hold on to your top 10 because just busy right now. We got plenty tomorrow. What you learned in July. I know you got a couple of bets you want to give out, but let's do this. And Dustin is a Mets fan. He's one of my best friends, another one of my good friends in New York, a huge Mets fan. Their philosophy, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dustin, was you're going to need a horse at the front of that rotation next year anyway. Keep Verlander now. I want to ask you two, as far as Verlander getting traded to Houston, would you, if you were the Mets, Amal and Berkey, would you have held on to Verlander to be that horse next year for the Mets?
No, I think it's a good idea. I mean, look, you know, Stephen Cohen has kind of this win at any cost type of mentality, and he spent a lot of money and they've gotten really nothing out of it. I mean, you know, last year they had the big collapse. Francisco Lindor has not been the top 10 caliber shortstop that you really wanted him to be. Scherzer, I think it was a good idea to kind of move on him. He's had a lot of soft tissue injuries here over the last few years. He's kind of wearing down a little bit. And for Verlander, if the big strikeout decrease is a very real thing, then you worry a lot about, you know, his skills degrading even more as we go into next season. So I think it was a good idea. And look, they grabbed potentially Houston's number one and number two prospects in that deal. And I think that's a really good thing for them.
Love the move by the Mets. I would have made it in a nanosecond. To me, when you get to the age Justin Verlander's at 40 right now, 41 next year, when the drop comes, it is precipitous, Patrick, and I don't think you can necessarily overcome it. You get that 140-inning situation for next year where it would vest for the 25 season. So these are all things that have to be taken into consideration. At some point in time, the Band-Aid remedy doesn't work. You've got to home grow some of your talent, and you have to be able to develop players or bring in prospects that are going to help you long-term.
Also, not that money's an option, but, I mean, they freed up, what, 60-some million with Shohei Ohtani coming out of the market?
I'm telling you right now, he's going to wind up with the Mets.
I would honestly say with those two trades, I would increase that possibility quite a bit because now they have a very clearly defined need for starting pitching and they freed up money because it's not about the spending for Cohen. It's more about the luxury tax and probably the principle of it.
Well, they would have been on the hook. I'm all mention it. The vest would have been 140 innings pitched next year for Verlander. If he hits it in 2024, they would have been on the hook. His decision for 2025, that would have been 2 years, $92 million off the book for the Mets to go take a shot at Shohei. Are you dissenting from the three of us? We all agree the Mets, the right move to move on from Verlander, big guy. What's your take?
Yeah, I'm not. If you're signing Ohtani this offseason, I still think you needed Verlander. I still think because there are no prospects arm-wise in the Mets system coming up to fill out this rotation. You go into a season with your 1-2-3-4 already solidified. You would go Ohtani. You would go Verlander. You go Kodai Senga, who's really turned it on lately, and Jose Quintana if they don't deal him in the next 7 minutes here. And I really like that as a potential start for your base. The Mets have plenty of homegrown guys on the roster already contributing. Francisco Alvarez, Pete Alonso, Jeff McNeil, Brett Beatty, Brandon Nimmo. These are all homegrown guys.
None of them pitch.
Yes. So my point is, but they didn't get any pitchers back in any of these deals.
I understand that, but here's the thing. You can go get somebody in free agency. As Patrick pointed out, you're potentially looking at $78 million to Verlander, who when the drop comes, it's going to be like a car accident. It's going to be quick.
They're paying a large portion of his contract to go to Houston.
I understand that. That's probably for this season. For next year, though, are they paying part of next year's deal?
They're getting a lot of money from the Mets. The Mets are paying more money on guys not on the roster next year than some other team's entire payrolls.
Brett Saberhagen's under contract. He's only like 59.
But I'm just talking about from the guys they dealt this year. I would have preferred to have kept Verlander. I think it makes you a legit World Series guy, whereas next year they'll be a fringe World Series type team.
Sorry to interrupt here, boys, but it looks like Jack Flaherty going to Baltimore. So the Orioles will make that move.
Yeah.
And the thing about Baltimore, too, I think is really important to point out, they've had a lot of success with lowering walk rates for guys. That's the biggest issue for Flaherty. A lot of it comes from April when he was very, very erratic. He's been much better since then. But they're really good at getting guys to throw high-efficiency strikes, like a Tyler Wells-type guy. If Flaherty's able to do that with his hard hit rate, his home run avoidance, that's a really nice little pickup for Baltimore.
I love this move. This guy can pitch. Former first-round pick out of Harvard Westlake in Los Angeles. He's an absolute dude. He had a rough season, and so many times people just get pushed to the back burner for no reason. Adam's absolutely right. He's had a couple of hiccups in terms of innings here or there. If the Orioles can correct some of this, this team found a real gem.
The Orioles, Flaherty, great job. Seamless always with Burke with the breaking news. And then at the end of August, maybe they get John Means back all of a sudden. That's formidable. Berkey, we'll be thinking about you. Thank you so much for coming in. Amal Shah, it's great to see you after a month. Dustin Sweetelson, you the same. Nice to see you. We'll be back tomorrow with Sharp Money. You got Tim and Sean coming up next. VSiN Primetime. Remember, Thursday, you can go sign up right now and get the college football betting guide. VSiN.com/subscribe.